a show where we discuss all things light pollution in the news. Learn more about this podcast by joining our Reddit at @RLightPollutionNews. You can also follow us on Twitter at Light Pollution News and find transcripts of this show and more at lightpollutionnews.com. If you'd like to be part of LPN, simply reach out to me, Bill, at lightpollutionnews.com. We can always use a volunteer hand editing and hosting the show. But enough with me, let's jump right over. Be that, this is episode one, and I'm having a hard time trying to find co-hosts. Joining me today is my ever-beautiful wife, Caitlin Evans. Caitlin, among many things, serves as volunteer crew leader and Habitat Committee member of Philadelphia's Friends of the Wissahickon. Welcome, Caitlin. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Doing well. All right, our first article comes to us from Kieran Pertil at the Los Angeles Times. As a reminder, you can find all articles and links in the show notes. Newsom vetoes bill aimed at preventing light pollution. California Governor Gavin Newsom vetoed light pollution bill introduced by Assemblyman Alex Lee of San Jose. The bill AB 2382 would require all outdoor lighting installations on public buildings to have anti-light pollution shields, motion sensors, or automatic dimming to reduce their effect on the environment. Lee remarked that the bill will negatively impact night skies and migratory bird species while failing to reduce wasteful and unnecessary electricity consumption. Lee also remarked that the veto was extremely disappointing. Newsom claims that the veto is necessary due to, quote, millions of dollars not accounted for in the budget. Newsom also noted that California's Green Building Standard Code already provides some light pollution measures. Travis Longcore, an urban ecologist at UCLA, disagreed, citing the beneficial long-term money savings of responsible lighting ordinances. That's something there, Caitlin, that California rejected having a light pollution policy at the top level for its public buildings.
Yeah, and I do believe that financial concerns are valid, but that doesn't really hold up for me in this case. They're not asking to retrofit all the existing lights. They're just asking for any new lights or any lights that are replaced after January 1st to be more efficient and light pollution friendly.
Yeah, and I also noticed that the bill was initiated by a representative from San Jose. San Jose recently had a battle with billboards, I believe. And that battle with the billboards, which was something that digital billboards are now enabled, I believe, in San Jose. So I wonder how much of that was the impetus for bringing a responsible ordinance, at least to public buildings in California. Seems like a big step back for California, which would have been possibly a layup piece of legislation.
And it would have been a good way to slowly introduce these more efficient lights over time, because they only need to do new ones or replaced ones and not do everything at once and slowly start seeing the energy savings from that. So it could have been a great way to get started.
Yeah, definitely. As you said, the energy savings piles up over time. The initial realization of that, the initial cost would definitely be offset in the long term. Next up, it's October, and you know what that means. It's bird migration season. And all across this country, we have Lights Out in different cities picking up the Lights Out program that the Audubon Society has been pushing hard for. This editorial comes from WIBC in Indianapolis. It appears that the Amos Butler Audubon Society is hard at work trying to convince city and business leaders to turn down those lights. We've got the Indianapolis Zoo, Indianapolis Public Library, and the Salesforce building all participating. Sounds like the ball is rolling in Indianapolis, doesn't it, Caitlin?
For anyone that's not familiar with the Lights Out program, this is an initiative started by the Audubon Society to get city buildings and residential buildings to turn out or turn down their lights during the night during peak bird migration season in both spring and fall. For example, here in Philly, they ask buildings to turn out their lights between 12 a.m. and 6 a.m. for the months of April, May, September, and October. And this is important because more than 1 million birds die annually from building strikes in North America. The birds become disoriented when they fly through these brightly lit areas, and they get confused by the bright artificial lights.
And that usually happens especially on cloudy nights, right? When the clouds hang down?
Yes, because the birds, they use the stars in the Earth's magnetic field to navigate. So on a cloudy night, they don't have the stars to navigate. All they can see is the bright glow of the cities. They get pulled towards them and become disoriented.
Just another example of nature's struggle to deal with human impact on the ecology. Speaking of light at night, when it comes to the actual volume, it's a bit remarkable. They used to be the only way to measure darkness was by use of something called a sky quality meter, which is a handheld device that would capture light. Now, per Nature, researchers Dominika Karpinski and Mieczysław Kunz, I butchered those names, I'm sure, from Turin, Poland, may be testing a new automated network of light pollution measuring devices designed to be placed at select points throughout the community to report data back to a cloud via Wi-Fi. The device, roughly 3 cubic feet in size, contain a dual diode sensor, with one diode capturing visible light wavelengths and the other capturing infrared. Initial tests used 2 devices. The researchers compared the results to previous handheld SQM readings and found they were actually in line with expectations. Next up, the researchers rolled out 35 devices and tested them en masse at their meteorological terrace of the Nicolaus Copernicus University. If this is true, these devices might actually be able to provide something that could be used for a basis for legal standing, for a legal measurement of what constitutes a certain amount of light pollution. Light pollution advocates aren't as advanced as other conservation groups in providing quantifiable details of the impacts of light at night, and this is a step forward inching in that direction. That makes me pretty happy to hear, and I'm hoping that something like this can continue and spread throughout the world.
Yeah, I think any time that you can get firm numbers in front of people, that's always a good way to get them to see your point of view and show them data that they can actually see.
In previous experience, SQM meters were used to provide details for getting designations, and they still are used for providing details for getting designations for IDA, for International Dark Sky sites, and for different levels of protection. However, to actually use it in a city setting and say, this is what we're looking at, and this is the track, the volume of light, any volume of light changes that occurs, I think that has tremendous amount of data that could be used in a very positive way to help bring about responsible use of light in towns and communities. Moving on to some health news here. What's a wallaby? Do you know what wallabies are, Caitlin?
I believe they're a small little marsupial, right?
I believe you're right. They're pretty interesting creatures. This one comes from Thomas Crow of phys.org from Particle in a Land Down Under. A new study by Alicia Gomorfsky of La Trobe University looks at the impact of white light, called blue light in the article, but we're talking about white light, on melatonin suppression. Gomorfsky conducted a 10-week study to ascertain impacts, if any, white light had on wallabies. The construction was simple. Gomorfsky exposed one group to 448 nanometer white light LEDs, one group to 605 nanometer of warm LEDs, and one group received no light whatsoever. Demorski found that the specific type of light heavily affected wallaby melatonin levels. Melatonin apparently acts as an antioxidant, capturing free radicals which arise out of inflammation. Melatonin, according to Demorski, is known as the hormone of darkness. Hormone of darkness, Caitlin. Wallabies exposed to white light experience significant melatonin suppression when compared to amber and dark wallabies. Beyond melatonin, the change of light throughout the four seasons actually affects signaling for things like reproduction. Animals that can breed certain times of year, such as wallabies, rely on their biological clock to ensure births occur when there's enough food to raise their young, Demorski says. So how about that, Caitlin? We're talking about the measurement here was in specific wavelength of light, which there's no direct translation, as I've found, and I've prodded some notable people on what that translation should be in something colloquially as temperature Kelvin. So the best way to put it is a white LED is going to be something akin to daylight, I believe. And then the 605 nanometer is going to be something that's much warmer, much more towards the red side. So what Demorski is finding is that these animals, that when they received no light at night or just a warm light, they had a much better quality of life.
Yeah, and we know from research that blue light at night negatively affects humans as well. That's why we're told if we're using our phones or computers at night, we're supposed to use the night warm light setting. Yeah. Yes, so that way we're receiving more of the red light and less of the blue light, which is, like in the study, affects our melatonin levels, which control your sleep-wake cycles.
That's why my phone switches over every night at 10 o'clock, right, to the warm light level. And so is my laptop and everything else around.
And another interesting takeaway from the article was that many Australian mammals have been shown to reduce their nocturnal activity under a full moon to avoid predation. And wallabies are nocturnal animals, so they're also thinking that this artificial light at night is acting similar to a full moon, so they would be reducing their activity at night, which is harmful to them as they're nocturnal animals. That's when they need to be out and foraging and, you know, going about their business.
And well, we'll switch gears here a little bit, because it is October, and evidently the streetlights in Annapolis are getting spooky. Per Fox 5 DC report, LED streetlights are malfunctioning across Maryland. Since the installation a year ago, the lights gradually changed to a bewildering purple. Baltimore Gas and Electric said that they changed over 5,000 light fixtures to fix this problem. How do you feel about this, Caitlin?
I think it would be fun for Halloween to have some purple lights, but, you know, other than that, I could see it being a little bit annoying.
You know, the light that's supposed to happen for people going down the street driving, like making sure that they don't run into other cars or people.
So, Caitlin, is this a government conspiracy to bake Maryland in Raven's purple, or just a malfunction?
I think it's Raven's conspiracy here, Bill.
They have a lot of faith in the Ravens out there.
Oh, yeah.
It's just bacon in purple. Where do they find people for these interviews? You ever question that?
All the time.
Well, speaking of people, a lady who was walking across the Evelyn Moakley Bridge was struck when a streetlight fell on her. This happened in Boston, upwards of where WBUR of Boston is reporting that workers are replacing upwards of 12 streetlights on the Evelyn Moakley Bridge after one struck a woman in the head. Jeez, gosh. Man, I thought you were supposed to be able to see these things first. But what is happening here?
You really got to be in the wrong place at the wrong time for something like that.
Oh, man. I'm shocked. We'll wait for the horror flick to come out on this one. I think that'll be a nice Halloween-y event. Well, wrapping up our technology section, how do you feel about digital license plates? Have you guys heard of digital license plates? Per Jonathan Gitlin at Ars Technica, California Governor Gavin Newsom signed Bill AB 984 into law. AB 984 allows for e-ink displays to be a legal alternative to traditional metal license plates. That's right. AB strikes up a necessary balance of innovation and privacy when digitalizing the only thing on our cars today that remains antiquated, license plates, said California Assemblymember Lori Wilson. The manufacturer, Reviver, released the R-Plate product using a monochrome e-ink screen protected by a cover that is, hold on, 6 times stronger than glass. At the low rate of $19.95 per month for 2 years, or $215.40 for 4 years, you can now have your own digital license plate.
Just another thing we need to get a subscription to, your license plate. Just as bad as getting a subscription for your heated seats. What's next? For your windows?
You can pay for your license plates now and by month. That's great. And I do wonder about the actual light output on this. That's why we included it in here on the Light Pollution News podcast. If they're using e-ink, I can imagine it being not as offensive as a full-on LED, but at the same time, it needs to be bright enough and contrasty enough that a officer would be able to see that car, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, should be interesting to see who gets these. And there's also a mention in the article, I don't know if you saw this, that they could have amber alerts show up, and they could also have some other messages.
Stolen vehicle
messages.
That's literally the only thing I think this would be useful for.
If you had a stolen vehicle, why don't you just take it off?
That's also a good point.
I mean, yeah. Not going to say too much about the city of Ready Love, but there's plenty of people who don't have license plates. Okay, we have two more stories to wrap it up today. And the first one comes from Chris Connell at the Foothills Forum. Rappahannock, Virginia's dark sky protectors worry about development marching west. 760 $500,000 homes are to be built, crammed in, it looks like, which has environmentalists in a scurry. The homes, which include a village commercial center, which has starry sky advocates worried. In 2015, advocates attempted to put responsible night residential lighting ordinances on the books, but met resistance from fellow community members. The government already has enough control over our rights and property, said one homeowner. When residents were polled on their top 12 concerns, dark skies sat midway at 6, better internet and cell phone service were a little higher. However, starry sky advocates were able to secure an international dark sky park designation in 2019 from the International Dark Sky Association. And that effort took about a year to obtain. Advocates worked tirelessly in a community to offer free, responsible lighting fixtures to stores, churches, and more. But now, pending sizable development, the world apart from Washington, as one local put it, may have challenging times ahead. Rappahannock County at this time is relatively rural, with only 28 people per square mile versus a towering 3,000 per square mile eastward towards Fairfax County. At the moment, developers appear receptive to the environmentalist concern, but as such is often the case, time will tell. Some community members remain concerned about safety in a rural area, and they appear to go to light to resolve their fears. Apparently, last year there was a dispute between a public astronomy observing event and a neighbor to the attending park's driveway, whereby the neighbor installed lighting out of fear of people trespassing. This resulted in an agreement to build a wooden fence and cut down on light trespass into the park. Light trespass, for those who aren't aware, is light that exceeds one's property line. So, for instance, if your irresponsible neighbor has a light fixture, usually in the front porch, that blares out all many directions, that light is going to be seen from you across the street. That's light trespass. A lot of people are afraid to lose the lights. They think of it as a safety issue, keeping burglars away. Rick Kohler, prominent Star Sky advocate, said, "But lights aren't necessarily keeping burglars away. It just shows them where to go." Connell notes that one business praised the newly installed responsible lighting from Starry Sky Advocates, noting the pleasant soft white temperature and lack of glare. Lack of glare! Regarding the light placement scheme, specifically, member Claire Castle sums it up as, "It's all voluntary. You can't always convince people it's something they should or want to do. There's that fear sometimes. Oh, it's the dark. Oh, it's the dark." I truly think that most people are just scared of the dark. And they like to look outside and see stuff because they're so terrified that it's something they can't see.
Fear and security are issues that come up a lot in these conversations. And people are afraid of losing their outdoor lighting. They're afraid they won't be able to see if there's someone outside. But there's actually a photo in this article that, you know, really exemplifies that a picture is worth a thousand words. It's the photo of this auto shop, and they show you the old, super bright white lighting. And as you look at it, it's this big glare of light. You can't see anything. Then they show you the after photo with the responsible lighting, and it's a much softer light, lack of glare, like they said, and you can see so much more. You can see so much further. And I think that's what people don't understand about putting in responsible lighting. You're not taking away the light. You're using the light more efficiently. You're using it to see places that you actually want to see. You don't have the glare when you're looking into the light. You can actually see much more when you have this responsible lighting.
Yeah, you can see contrast, right? You can actually make out what's there when the light is coming top down and it's not in your eyes. At least that's what I come across. That's what I find. A good corollary is when you're driving down a road, and if you have a bright light coming at you, you can't see necessarily off to your right, right? You get blinded by that light, and that's, yeah. I thought this was an interesting article going in a beautiful place of Virginia, beautiful spot in Virginia, and as one of the people in the article actually mentioned that when she first went there, it was so dark at night that when she would go out, you know, it was hard to to see her feet, but not anymore because the sky glow has become very prominent on the horizons.
And it sounds like they've done a lot of work in this town. I was impressed with all of the grants that they were able to secure to replace a lot of these lights. So they're able to replace lights for people for free because of the funding from these grants. And I think that's a great way to get the ball rolling in the community, because once people see what you actually mean when you say you want responsible lighting, they can see that is actually beneficial. It's not that you're trying to take away these lights.
Isn't that amazing? They had all these, this free program to exchange out lights. That's something that if you're able to mimic it, man, that'd really be very beneficial. I wonder, when seeing a developer come into an area, and you know, we've seen this, developers will come in, and the ones that actually are trying to play with the environmental, so are actually trying to be responsible in how they handle the actual design, how they handle the stormwater runoff, how they handle all the different pieces of the environment that they're going to be impacting. They sometimes do make really nice responsible developments where the lighting is right, the way they're managing the surrounding area is right. And then you have individuals come in and they'll change that. The individual homeowner will come in and change that because they don't find it as up to whatever needs that they're trying to fill. So I wonder how much of that we'll see here. Will this developer be able to really work with the community and kind of fit their needs? And then will you have people come out from D.C. and want to light it up as bright as everything they see in D.C. because that's what they know? and they're not, they don't know anything more than that? I don't know.
Hopefully not, but we can certainly hope for the best in this case.
Yeah, we definitely can. Definitely can. Finally, some good news. It's always good to end on some good news and have the good guys win. This comes to us from the Lena Lefevers of Only in Your State. Nebraska is now home to the newest dark sky reserve in the world. Nebraska! Home of the not-so-great Huskies at the moment. That's not saying they're not a great school, just a football team. Seeing some challenging moments as of late. You don't need any special equipment to enjoy the stars at the Merritt Reservoir. Just show up before sunset to stake out your spot and be sure to leave your headlights, phones, and other artificial lights off. Give your eyes time to adjust to the deep darkness before the stars appear above you. And these shots on this, in this article are bonkers. They're great. Did you check out these shots?
Pretty phenomenal, Bill.
How do you feel? Do you think that we have Cherry Springs on par here? What are we thinking here?
I think it's pretty close.
Pretty close, yeah.
Yeah.
So, those of you not aware, in Pennsylvania, we have the International Dark Sky Park, the Cherry Springs State Park, which is a stargazing park. And we have the beautiful Milky Way. And there's nothing better than going out at night and seeing a natural nighttime rise. You have the colors, right? You have the color change from that, from dinner time into evening into night. It's just incredible.
It's pretty spectacular. And if you've never seen the Milky Way, I highly suggest you get out there and try and find it.
What was the first thing? I'm curious. What was the first thing that you... What was your first thought when you first saw the Milky Way?
I don't really know. I grew up in a pretty rural area, so I've always had a pretty good view of the night sky. So the Milky Way has kind of always been part of my life, and I sort of took it for granted until I moved to an area where you can see very few stars and realized how much everybody was missing by not getting to see it.
Probably can see about 26 or so stars here.
And a
including
good night.
Jupiter.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the first time I ever saw the Milky Way in its full entirety was when I was 28. And I was at Cherry Springs, and that blew my mind. And I never saw that before. And I remember looking up, and there was no, it was all dark. And I imagined the same thing at the Merritt Reservoir. It's all dark with the clouds. But then when the clouds break, you'll see rivers of stars. It's astounding. So,
Central Nebraska is the central part of the migratory route of the sandhill cranes, so it's also an important wildlife conservation area as well.
Interesting. So do these cranes... tell me about cranes. So are the cranes hitting at the where they go to the reservoir? Are they water?
Yeah, so cranes are...
I assume that they're water.
They're shore birds, wading birds. Yeah, so this is not their main stopover. Their main stopover is along the Platte River, but this is part of their flyway, so they do come through this area. And, you know, I'm assuming the dark skies are certainly beneficial to this. As we discussed earlier, the birds do navigate by the stars, so I'm sure preserving this as a dark sky will help with their conservation as well.
Very interesting. Yeah. That's great to know, too, for any birders out there. If you want to check out some dark skies and see some great birds. All right. Thank you, Caitlin, for joining me today. Thank you for listening to Light Pollution News. We'll see you in about 4 weeks. Be sure to join the conversation on Reddit at @RLightPollutionNews or find a transcript of this show on our website at lightpollutionnews.com. Be sure to join the conversation on Reddit at Light Pollution News. We're always looking for volunteer assistance. If you're interested in joining the podcast as an editor or host, write to me at bill@lightpollutionnews.com. Until next time, it's been another Light Pollution News. First one is in the books.